One of the specialties of the American Studies Museum is what philosopher Elizabeth Minnick calls the BFO, the blinding flash of the obvious. The museum's vast collection of artifacts, knickknacks, and ephemera invites audiences to think twice about things that we usually don't even think once about. Today, we follow the scent of something that's often right in front of our nose, perfume. The ingredients in this volatile liquid are distilled from flowers or other natural and synthetic sources, and the overall blend is carefully crafted to emit an attractive fragrance. In American culture, there are lots of perfumes, from potpourri to bathroom air fresheners to car odorizers. But when we say perfume, what we mainly mean is the aromas that women wear to smell interesting, and not just to insects. The odor of perfume becomes the sweet smell of success when a man is intrigued by its musky bouquet. Perfumes are culturally prized not just for their fragrant emissions, but also for their rich associations. That's why favored scents are often floral, with all of the cultural suggestiveness of blossoms and freshness and springtime and pollination and, of course, sex. But in fact, perfumes are seldom sold by smell alone. If they were, perfume ads would be much more matter of fact than they are. They would say, "Brand X, it smells." Or, "Brand Y, it smells good." But perfume ads are complex cultural products aimed to make smelly liquids even more fragrant and compelling. One problem for the producers of perfume ads is that you can't show the product in use. Once it's on the skin, it's invisible, and in a visual culture, that's a handicap. So perfumeries resort to turning the invisible into something you can see. They suggest the benefits of use by showing people who seem to have been led by their noses into confidence or romantic relationships. A lot of ad sequences are very dreamy, suggesting either that the smell is sleep-inducing or that you can attain your dreams by drenching yourself in the scent. Another important part of a perfume purchase is the name, which needs to be exotic or suggestive, or both. The crack research team of the American Studies Museum could find no perfumes called John Smith or Mary Jones. There are none called Adequate or OK. Sometimes the perfume bears the name of a designer, like Chanel or Calvin Klein. Often, it's an elegant or exotic-sounding name, like Dolce & Gabbana or Shalimar. Sometimes the name is an emotion or a personal characterization. You can buy Allure from Chanel, Happy from Clinique, Romance from Ralph Lauren, and Freedom from Tommy Hilfiger. Oh, how Dr. America wishes for freedom from Tommy Hilfiger. Properly perfumed, you can be a rogue or a scoundrel or a boss. You get a lot with a few ounces of liquid, and it's not all in your nose. Much of it is in your mind. A rose by any other name might smell as sweet, but it wouldn't sell as sweetly. Interestingly, one of the most important parts of a perfume purchase is not the liquid, but the container. The carefully designed packages are, in fact, an essential ingredient of the product. Apparently, you can't sell perfume in a mason jar or an aluminum can. In a visual culture, a vat of liquid wouldn't convey the proper panache. Instead, perfume packaging needs to be vial. That's V-I-A-L. A perfume bottle needs to be stylish, like a jewel or a piece of crystal stemware. If it sprays, it can't be like Windex. It has to be a gentle puff from an attractive atomizer. From the American Studies Museum, this is Dr. America, sniffing around American culture and noticing that something smells.